This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Kick myself.
I'm just kidding. The man you see is the
place to be. Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
If it's too much for you and your big cock of the walk Knights of Columbus fat cat.
When does it end, JR?
Bring the carriage back to the fucking thing, then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it end?
Making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
It's not Austin in L.A. It's not Cabana in Chicago. It's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
The scene was rocky, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your host, Justin Zero, coming to you live on this Sunday evening. First time in a long time, Scott Criscolo. We are coming at people up from a Sunday. How's that?
I know, isn't that nuts? Kind of crazy. Good evening, JR. Welcome, everyone, to, what is this, season six? Or season five?
It's a long season.
Season five of the longest running episodic motherfucking gold. You know, it's funny, JR, because we were planning.
Sure.
It is season six, right? Yeah, season six. We were planning so much 500. Excuse me. We've been planning episode 500 so much that we haven't really thought about doing like regular stuff, stuff for a while. So it's kind of crazy, but
be out of practice. It is episode 501. Hopefully, everyone enjoyed episode 500. It was quite the labor of love, but it was a lot of fun. And if you didn't check it out, you should, because it was a really good trivia tournament. That was cool.
Yes.
And we took some trips down memory lane, had some unexpected visitors and whatnot. Mm. So definitely check it out if you haven't yet. But we are moving on now back to our regular rhythm with episode 501. I do want to mention, you know, we did that list in the beginning of the episode of kind of all the people that like fans and contributors. One guy I did forget is the ref there, Rob Page on Twitter. I'm not as up on the Twitter people because I just don't interact as much there, but there are some. So I wanted to give him a shout out. He's been a fan for a long time.
Yes.
I didn't put him on the list, but I think I gathered almost everyone else. I didn't hear from anyone else anyway. So wanted to just get out of the way before we go ahead and dive in to our show tonight. But before we do dive in, Scott, we should bring in our special third man in the booth. Now, we were supposed to have Kelly as we teased on episode 500, but he sucks so bad at trivia. We decided to kill him off. But in reality, we were supposed to record on Tuesday night. That got bumped to tonight. Kelly couldn't record. But our emergency backup, who's always ready when we need him at the drop of a mic, that's John D'Amato. John, how are you?
Yes, good evening, guys. Congrats again on the 500. And thanks for having me for 499, 500, and 501. I'm honored. Yeah.
It's a lot. And you're going to be here for 502, right?
In 502.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get some complaints. I might be overstaying my welcome as a recurring guest.
Just don't swallow too loud, that's all.
Some recurring guests are hit and miss, yeah. And the windows are closed. The crickets won't be joining us tonight. The Tenacious Crickets.
Tenacious Crickets. Sounds like a ska band.
Beautiful. And also, happy Columbus Day. Scott, I hope all you guys survived the parade. I know there's a lot of walking, and it was very warm for Columbus.
It was the first.
Under all that fuzz with your hats and the suits. I hope you guys didn't suffocate.
Yeah. I thank God that's changing. But, yeah, it was pretty hot today. It was more like Memorial Day Parade.
Arezzo survived okay?
Yeah, he was fine. He didn't dress. But no.
Did you push him in the rickshaw like Bobby and Gorilla down the boardwalk?
And they're off.
Like the boardwalk.
Or he's like Fuji when he gets there. He gets the ride to the end.
Anyway,
all
right. So,
what a start.
Now I'm nice and air-conditioned. Air conditioner in October, seriously. All right. So for those that may remember 499 many moons ago, we did, of course, SummerSlam 88. So, JR, we are back in the office tonight as we're back in our regular groove. So this evening we will go back to, as mentioned, our offices on 33rd for this evening's jaunt, which is September 29th, 1988, which one of the oddest days of the week that I think we've ever done a house show. This was a Thursday.
Okay.
Which is very strange.
Well, Thursday, you know, night. We're on an off night. We're doing a Sunday night, and there you go. It's a Thursday.
So there you go. So a Thursday night house show here from, of course, the office on 33rd Madison Square Garden in New York City. With this being a Thursday, so we'll have some kind of some odd things going on in the pop culture later as well. But there was only one other house show on this Thursday evening, is of course post SummerSlam. Everybody's back off to their own loops. They were down in our man Mr. Dennis Nunez's neck of the woods, the Myrena, the Miami Arena down in Miami. Only 7,500 for this one. A new masked wrestler debuted or wrestled. He beat Barry Horowitz. We haven't seen him yet, so we'll wait until we do. The rest of the card, Mr. Perfect, or Kurt Hennig, defeated Jim Brunzel. Jake Roberts pinned Rick Rude. Couldn't do it last month at SummerSlam, so might as well do it somewhere else. The Hart Foundation defeated the Rougeaus. Greg the Hammer Valentine pinned Don Morocco after hitting him with his shin guard. Of course, Morocco, as we talked about, JR, slowly phasing out. Your World Tag Team Champions, Demolition, defeated the British Bulldogs. And in the main event, Hulk Hogan defeated the Big Boss Man via countout. So,
there you go. First up for Boss Man, as we'll see.
Yeah, first of many for the Boss Man. Big, big spot here for him. Any other notes, JR?
Yeah, we do have some. On the 9388 Superstars, Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with the new IC champion, the Ultimate Warrior, which Jimmy Hart interrupted, distracting Warrior long enough for Honky to sneak up from behind and attack the champion with a guitar. President Jack Tunney also announced that Ron Bass was fined $10,000 for his attack on Brutus Beefcake a week before, which of course knocked Beefcake off of SummerSlam. And during a match featuring the one-man gang, a pre-recorded promo with Slick aired in which he said the gang would soon have a new look. On the 9-10-88 Superstars, after a match featuring Rick Rude, he pulled down his tights to reveal a second pair underneath, which had Shawn Roberts' face printed on them. Moments later, Jake Roberts came out, attacked Rude, ripped the tights off, resulting in a censor sign appearing on the screen. On 9-11, you mentioned, on 9-11 Challenge, you mentioned a masked man making his debut, and he debuted on TV, defeating George Shout, that is the Blue Blazer. We'll get more into him soon. And on the 9-17 Superstars, Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with the Rougeau brothers where they introduced Jimmy Hart as the new manager. Hart announced that he had given the Rougeaus 25% of the Hart Foundation's contract, which Hart still owned. So this is a very, I don't want to call it convoluted because it's an interesting story tick that we'll cover as we move along here. But there is this little feature now where Jimmy's with the Rougeaus. He still owns the Hart's contract. And basically, I don't know if he's funneling the money to the Rougeaus or they're making what the Hart should be making. The whole thing's kind of confusing. On 9/24, Gene Okerlund was on location in deepest, darkest Africa, where he was invited by Slick to see the transformation of One Man Gang to Akeem. Slick and Akeem demanded he never be referred to his former name again. We'll talk about that much more. And the episode also featured the final appearance of Craig DeGeorge. So Sean Mooney has officially supplanted him as this transition has occurred. We also have a debut here right off the bat, Scott. And that is our play-by-play man, Rod Trongard. Rodney Douglas Trongard, born February 16th, 1933. A commentator for AWA throughout the 80s, calling matches involving the likes of Hulk Hogan, Bachwinkle, Gagne, the Road Warriors, etc. His voice is featured on many AWA weekly ESPN broadcasts. Signature phrase, of course, was from coast to coast, continent to continent, and border to border. During broadcasts, he often included city names in the phrase, signifying the broad reach of the AWA. Alongside fellow commentators, he worked with Lord James Blears and Lee Marshall, left the AWA in 88 for this brief stint here with the WWF. And that brings us to tonight's action, and that is hosted by Rod Trongard, Lord Al, and superstar Billy Graham. Back again, brother. Heard him, of course, quite a bit recently. He's been the main color guy for us, Scott, here.
Yes.
Both at MSG and then, of course, SummerSlam. So they set the stage for tonight's big card of action, and we open things up with a thriller, that is Sam Houston taking on Terry Taylor, as Taylor still slumming it in the openers here against the old curtain jerk and fave Sam Houston. Al says Houston needs to save his energy. No two-step dancing tonight for this match. Taylor begs off and pops Sam with a shot, and Billy says he's showing his experience edge. Gets him back and forth with Taylor doing some mind games, but Houston dominates, eventually slugging Taylor to the floor. Sam continues to control as Graham rants about how stupid it is to turn your back on your opponent. Sam does a chicken motion, so we know who to blame for that. Sam gets a suplex for two and then gets a cross body for one before working the arm. Sammy looking spry tonight. Houston cuts off Taylor, works the arm some more. Taylor eventually leverages Sam to the floor, works in some strikes and arrogant, lazy covers. Sam comes back with a hot flurry, but the bell rings to some confusion, and we apparently have a draw, or not, because Fink then announces that Taylor won by DQ. Not sure at first why. It's kind of a weird finish. Trogard and crew are just completely lost. They have no idea what's going on. The crowd is lost. The match, of course, wasn't that bad until the ending. I thought both guys had some nice energy. They played to the crowd. And then the replay does show the ref calling for the bell for no reason at all, which almost, I don't know if it was like a rib or the call came to just go home and they just rang the bell. The whole thing was very confusing. And both guys are going nowhere anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I thought the whole thing was very odd. It didn't make much sense. Starting the show off on a shaky foot here. I went one star, Scott.
Your match time, 8:19. And I gave it a half a star. I thought it was fucking terrible. And I know a lot of guys like good old Will and a lot of our guys are big Terry Taylor marks. But I don't know at this point what the deal was, but he didn't, you know, this match didn't help anybody. It was plodding. It was slow. And then I don't know if Vince was like, which he would do in the future with when it came to matches he didn't like. He just decides to stop them. Maybe unlike what he did that one match on, what was it, Jacked or whatever in the 2000s. But maybe he just told just end this. This is fucking terrible. And maybe that's what he did. I don't know. Maybe he didn't give a shit that it made no sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, very weird. It was utterly strange. It was so strange. And the match was just not good. Sam Houston's just awful. There was a couple of moves, like the move right before the bell, because Sam Houston, or I think it's Terry Taylor, goes for a sunset flip, and it's just like he stops midway and they're like falling over each other. Oh, it was just a fucking disaster. It was an absolute mess. It wasn't good, and we'd see that as the show progressed. The combinations they had on this night were not the best choices, but this was just not good at all, John. Half star for me. Like JR said, Terry Taylor's just some faceless. In WWF world, he's just some faceless schlub. And Sam Houston, we all know, is kind of useless anyway. You said it many times. You've been on with us for many Sam Houston matches, and what you usually say is that he's another cowboy that doesn't fit the northern crowd, and I think this pretty much cinched that.
Oh, what a shit show this was! I don't know where to start. Let's start with the ref. First of all, he looked like a Mills Lane with a beard. So we'll just call him Mills Lame because geez, the guy didn't even freaking communicate.
Yeah, it was awful.
They were so confused. It looked like he counted three, and then Finkel called Taylor as the winner. He didn't really say it by DQ, so. So from what I saw, that he counted three, and he was even saying it verbally. He was like, "Yeah, he was like, it's a three count."
Yeah.
So he gave.
But did they say DQ on commentary? Someone said DQ, right?
Yeah, Trongard
did.
He was lost. Trongard said Houston must have been DQ'd, but verbally he was saying it was three, and they on the count where you know I rewound it and he did count three on that sunset flip or whatever. So. So Mills Lame, first of all, sets the pace, and for an opener, the crowd was already dead. Like you said about Houston, they just weren't into him. He would try for that babyface comeback, and the crowd wasn't responding at all. And he would fall for Taylor's dumb every time they clenched in the ropes, and Taylor would sucker punch him. Houston, you know, fell for it like four times, which is he looked kind of dumb. But that ref, Mills Lame, botched the whole thing. I don't understand what happened there.
It was a mess. Sloppy way to start this show. Not the best sign we're getting off after this match. And Terry Taylor already, I mean, just completely dead in the water, going nowhere. Like, you know, obviously there's more to come for him. But as of right now, just nothing. Just he looks like he's just the next in line of randoms like, you know, Brad Rangins and others that would pop in, do some opening round matches, opening card matches, and just vanish again. So we'll see how things turn around for him. But as of right now, just going nowhere fast. The opposite of that, the antithesis, as some may say, brings us to this next match, and that is a big tag team outing between the Rockers and Los Conquistadores. Fun one here. The Conquistadores get an entrance to booze as Graham lists all the random Central American countries that could be home to the Masked Men. I love how he's obsessed with this, by the way. He does it every show. He goes through all the possible countries these guys could be from. Roddy settles on Nicaragua as the home of the Conquistadores. Big pot for the Rockers in this showcase match as they keep settling in to the promotion, get a debate over which Conquistador is hurt. I'm sorry, over which is which. And Al says number two is the fat one, basically, as we get rolling. Marty and number one start with some basic lockups and feeling out. Graham puts over how the Rockers have been getting in the gym, getting their bodies together. Conquistadores tag in and out. And we get the two trading off the torture racks in a cool spot. Sean comes in and breaks things up and cleans house. We reset with Marty working the arm as Billy says he should have tagged out. It's prophetic as the tide turns and the Conquistadores double team. Sean comes in to save and now the Rockers double team and clear the ring. Al says the Rockers are undefeated as Marty grinds number two with a chin lock and then trades off with Sean as they maintain control. Conquistadores unleash some chicanery to wipe out Sean as they get right back on it, double teaming and cheating where they can as they punish Michael zeroing in the back. Michael selling and bumping is great here. It really takes a tight little beating as the heels expand their offensive set a bit. Al thinks we've seen the demise of the Rockers already tonight as Sean nearly gets a sunset flip for three. The Conquistadores keep pounding and switching in and out, teasing Marty as well. All classic heel work. Sean punches free and nearly escapes but gets trapped in the corner again as Al wonders why the ref is letting the Conquistadores tag without holding the tag rope. Good luck monitoring that one, Al. We get more hot tag teases as Sean also fails to make a tag when he has a chance, eventually dodges a dive off the top, makes the big tag. Marty comes in, wipes out both guys as the crowd rallies him on. And a split second later, Sean hits a splash off the top, and the Rockers get the win. I thought it was a hot finish to a fun, well-executed match with a perfect heat segment. Good selling, hard work. I thought it was good showing by both guys in this one. I went 2.5 stars. Just real solid work, real solid action. Nice showcase for the Rockers, John.
Yeah, this got the crowd going. They were into the Rockers from the very beginning. They did what the opener should have done, which is get the crowd engaged. And I love that unique spot with the Conquistadores where they got Marty up in the backbreaker and they were alternating. And then they got tricked where Sean took over and laid him down gently. That was a unique spot there where they were exchanging the backbreakers. But the Conquistadores, Alfred was pretty priceless on commentary where he said, number one is taller and number two is shorter and stubbier. I liked his description on that.
He's just trying to be kind. Conway is saying he's fat.
Shorter, yeah, exactly. Because those Conquistador athletes did no favors to them. Who was that? Rivera and Estrada. They're two slumps.
By the way, I feel like the switch flip for Rivera when he got under this hood because he was god awful as himself. But I feel like he's serviceable in this role. Unless it's just because I feel like they're working equally. It's not like it's all Estrada.
The Conquistadors' offense was real strong. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the Rockers, I think they sold a little too much. They wanted to get like the big babyface in peril and the big pop and Sean did a lot of selling, but I think they sold too much. If they wanted to be souped up for the demolition, it wasn't really a dominant victory. They sold most of the match and. And then of course they got the hot tag at the end and with the big comeback, but they played the sympathy role a lot. Mm-hmm. But overall, it was a 2-star match. So I'll pass it on to the shorter and stubbier PIC.
How dare! I thought you were going to call me supple. I thought maybe that's what Alfred was going to call him, supple. But there's only one man who's supple in Alfred's world. I gave this 2.5 stars, like you, JR. Your match time as we go through three straight. Fairly long matches for house show. This one was 14:30, so a pretty decent length match, and it gave them time to move around. The Rockers, I think, even better than any other babyface team that the WWF has right now, mastering the art of selling. I mean, they do know how to take a beating. I agree with you, John, that maybe the Conquistadores maybe got a little more ass than they probably deserved, but. It still was good for the Rockers, and, you know, the Conquistadors, that's a gimmick that you can get away with being kind of schlubbish on, in terms of, you know, a babyface team getting put over. It's all right, I guess. And they kind of get a little bit back in a couple of months. But I thought that they did a good job. I thought there was a lot of good selling. I thought the Rockers told a good story. And to back up your point, JR, I think both Estrada and Rivera, you know, talk about guys, we used to think that Rivera just went through the motions waiting to get fired or quit or whatever.
Yeah.
Nothing further from the truth here. I mean, they both worked really hard. I mean, and they were selling like sons of bitches in the end when the Rockers made the hot comeback. I thought they were moving around very well. And I thought the storytelling was really good, and I thought the Rockers, you know, really got the crowd pumped after that pile of crap that they got handed in the beginning of the show. I thought I was going to give it 2 stars, but I thought the last few minutes of selling and storytelling actually gave it another half star. And the Rockers alone, and I know we've alluded to it a lot, JR, all year long in 1988. The Rockers are the prime example of the renaissance that the tag division is getting.
Yes.
And as we'll see later on in the show, one of the they're probably replacing another babyface team who was going to start to not be teaming as much. We mentioned one half of a tag team when I mentioned that house show down in Miami, and the other half of that team we'll see a little bit later on. So I think this was a good showcase for the Rockers. And a big win. Crowd was pumped for them. They're a fun team. Kids like them. They got, you know, bright colors.
Yeah.
So
they definitely fit in well.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great match there. I agree a little bit with you, John. Maybe they sold a little too much, but I feel like the match has kind of stretched a little bit on this show. And, you know, if they had gotten like maybe 8 minutes, they probably wouldn't have to. But, you know, 14 and a half, they had to tell a little bit of a story. Mm-hmm. And get a nice comeback. So I think it was a good chance for the fans to kind of start getting behind the Rockers as a credible face team. So fun match there, 2.5 for me. And Rockers look good, and the Conquistadors were very serviceable. And yeah. Again, I think both Estrada and Rivera really showed their that they're embracing this role.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're more than serviceable.
Looking solid.
Yeah, they play a good role. I mean, that role is needed. Especially with the tag division building so much, you need a couple of teams like that. You got the Bolsheviks as well, are kind of the other team. And on the face side, though, you're losing the two teams, so I'll be curious to see if any teams kind of slot in, because the Stallions and the Bees are pretty much on their final legs as teams working together. So we'll see that over the coming months. So it'll be interesting to me to see if any face teams pop up on that lower tier where, like, the Bolsheviks and the Conquistadors reside. So. All right, let's get to our next match, and I guess before we get into the match itself, we will mention it is the final appearance for us, Scott and John, of the Junkyard Dog. We saw him at SummerSlam. It's his final MSG here. I don't believe it was in our next Saturday Night's Main Event, and then he is replaced at Survivor Series. So we will not see him again, unless I'm wrong. Correct me, but I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
No, this is his final appearance in the building.
Yeah, so my 8th birthday, he made his debut for NWA at Clash 4 after he leaves here. So he's, you know, not even about 6 weeks later, he pops up in Crockett. He would appear during an altercation with the Russian Assassins and Ivan Koloff, saving Koloff. He would hang around there for a decent amount of time, on and off, really, into 92-93. A lot longer than probably most realize or remember. Like, did you think to yourself that he had been around that long?
No, I didn't actually.
Yeah, I mean,
I honestly didn't.
His last match is July 28th, 1993 for Crockett or WCW by that point.
Wow.
And
he looked awful in some of those later. Well, I'll get more to when I get to talk about my comments, but
yeah,
he's
been looking awful for a while. But but yes, he. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So he's there for a while, and then unfortunately, sadly, would pass away on June 2nd, 1998, in a single car accident in Forest, Mississippi, returning home from his daughter's high school graduation. And I remember that one popping up when I guess it would have been like during Raw, so, but it was like kind of one of the earlier deaths. Like, I guess it was, you know, after Pillman, but it was before it kind of had become commonplace. And that was a tough one, like knowing that he had been coming home from the graduation and died alone. He fell asleep in the car. So, like, it was a real sad one at the time. We inducted to the Hall of Fame in 2004. And then also, tragically, his daughter the one that whose graduation he had left when he passed away, she died on October 19, 2011. While talking on the phone to a friend, there was a loud thudding sound, and a friend called family members to go check. Finding her unresponsive, her brother called 911, and paramedics were unable to revive her. So she passed away at 31. It doesn't give any more details beyond that, which I didn't even realize that. So also sad. But yeah, so JYD's run. John, what do you have? Any comments or thoughts on JYD in his WWF career or beyond?
Just even in his short run, he was like one of the like main iconic figures of the like the rock and wrestling boom. Like with the cartoon, he was prominent, and that Funk feud and those first Saturday Night's main event, those angles with Jimmy Hart. He was a main cog in that boom between 85 and 87, and even the last couple of years here he's tailing off. In the ring, definitely, but he still had the crowd behind him. Even in his last matches, he still was able to pop the crowd.
Overall, and I watched a lot of Mid-South on the network and everything. JYD is one of the most charismatic guys in the history of this business. I don't think there's any doubt. And I think the big thing, and I talked about this with Nate on Main Event some time ago, you know, here's a guy who was in a part of the country where obviously even early 80s race relations were not stellar. And here's a guy who was an absolute hero to the people in Louisiana, Mississippi, you know, northern Texas, that whole Mid-South area. I think JYD would have had maybe a bigger window in the WWF had he come maybe 2 years earlier, maybe even have had an IC title run. Maybe he'd have beaten Morocco instead of Tito in 84 had he come a little bit sooner, a little bit earlier in the
decade.
What
if he would have came in 83? Could he have been Hogan? I mean, obviously no one's going to be Hogan, but could he have been their guy? What do you think, John?
I don't know. Maybe?
I don't think so. Just I see him as a solid number two or three, but
He's Denzel's friend, not Denzel. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't think he could have carried the load.
Denzel's friend.
It would have been tough. He definitely comes in a weird time because he was destined to be, you know, I guess at number two at absolute most, probably, you know, three, four as you start to move in. But there is that brief blip from when he arrives until, I don't know, what'd you say, like WrestleMania 2, where he's probably right behind Hogan?
Yeah.
He starts to fade then. Like all through the Funk feud, I'd say, pretty much he's pretty high up there. But yeah, he's definitely tailed off these last couple of years. Like if he had just come in and left, I don't know, maybe like around three after losing Harley, if he kind of faded. To me, this last year has been rough to watch him. And I know he's probably helping pop the crowds here and there and drawing some houses, maybe a little bit still. But overall, he's really been lumbering and fading big time. And you know, we saw those couple. Who do you have that feud with earlier in the year, Scott? Didn't he have a couple back to back MSGs? Was it?
It was
something with Demolition, and was George Steele involved in that too? Remember, I don't know.
They
might be mixing guys up.
Yeah, he teamed up with Animal. Yeah.
Let me see. Let me go to like March or let's see. JYD.
Yeah, well,
he fought Ron Bass in May.
Yeah, he had the split stuff with Demolition, him and Patera. Remember, they had the back to back matches. Didn't he beat Smash on that show? That was awful. Maybe it wasn't him and Steele. I don't know. Whatever. Either way. He's definitely been fading, and I think he probably hung around about a year and a half too long, and now he's finally gone here. And he's supposed to be at Survivor Series, and he ends up leaving, so doesn't have much here. I don't know if it was just contractual drugs or they just said it was time to go. But
let's see who he fought. Yeah, he fought Smash in February,
yeah.
And he fought Butch Reed in January. So he was busy here at the Garden in 88, but
yeah, busy making our lives miserable.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. But go ahead, let's get to our match.
Okay, All right, and he is fighting Haku, who is, of course, now the king. King Haku. Haku and Bobby hit the ring with the King's Royal Music, escorting them out. JYD thumps out, hanging on by that thread. Billy asks Al if JYD would become king if he wins, and Al says, I don't see that happening. Haku attacks at the bell. JYD eventually knocks him to the floor with headbutts as Billy and Rod talk about how hard JYD's head is. Going to get that one last time in before he leaves. Billy says he was knocking bumpers off of cars with his head earlier. JYD fights through a Bobby distraction, keeps tossing headbutts and punches. The two stand toe-to-toe and headbutt each other until Haku falls. And I thought that was a pretty fun, wild spot. Mm-hmm. JYD goes to chinlock as Billy says MSG's vibrating from the headbutt thunder. JYD then goes to the arm for a minute. Haku works free relents, but JYD comes right back with more headbutts, right back to the arm. The camera catches Bobby fishing in his trousers, as Rod calls them. Haku catches JYD with a thrust kick and takes over with more kicks and stomps. JYD tries to bow up, but Haku buries a knee to his chest for two. Haku keeps working the traps and then pinches JYD's tits for a minute, which Billy calls the pectoral majors, and then pinches the dorsi. Billy's really breaking out of those muscles, lubing up. JYD thumps free, but Haku just kicks him to the mat again and works him over in and out of the ring. JYD finally comes back with a thumb to the eye and loads some slow right hands. JYD hits a falling power slam. Bobby comes in to help during the pin, but stomps Haku by accident. JYD stares down Bobby, grabs him, but Haku levels him from behind, and he and Bobby stomp away for the DQ. JYD grabs a chain and clears house. Way too long and boring after the first minute, and then they get right to the shit finish. Way too many variations and nerve holds, and JYD's just in complete slow motion. I liked the headbutt battle. That was cool, but not so much. And honestly, this Haku singles push as king has not brought much to the table in the ring. I went a star almost out of respect and out of the headbutt battle, but really, like, I could see this anywhere between there and dud. But it's good that JYD's done because he's just not bringing much to the table. And again, I'd like your thoughts, Scott, on the match, but also on Haku and how you've felt he's gone with the singles push. Because I feel like ever since the Islanders have gone, like, he hasn't really done much in the ring.
I gave it a star as well. And when I looked at when I was watching this and I looked at the time, and by the way, in case no one we've never said it, all the match timings, courtesy of our good friend Grant Coffin on the history of WWE.com. He has 14:45, and the minute I saw that, when I started watching this, I go, "You've got to be fucking kidding me! Really? I'm gonna watch 15 minutes of this." I'll get to Haku in a minute. I mean, JYD. I mean, you could see like 3 minutes in, he was gassed. I mean, he was heaving on those headlocks. I mean, it was fucking dreadful. It was dreadful, and it's sad. It was really sad. And then somebody was it? I'm not sure if you said it, JR, but somebody said something about a speedball. He's got to use the speedball, and I said to myself, "Yeah, he probably did about three speedballs."
So that's the last thing he needs is another fucking speedball.
Yeah, so he's another fucking speedball. What else? It was just so sad. It was really. He just got so bloated. And again, if you go back to go on the network and you watch those 82, 83 Mid Souths, he is, or even 81, he was ripped. He was in great shape. Mm-hmm. Not so much anymore. He's a mess. And clearly, you know, Crockett picked him up strictly for name purposes. Because, I mean, even you go through some of the matches, he fights Flair at one of the clashes in 90. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. It's sad to see. It really is. For someone like me and you know, John, who remember watching him in the Mid-South in early WWF days, how awesome he was, captivating a crowd. And now he's just a literally a shell of his former self. Not good. As for Haku, I think the problem here, and I'm glad we're bringing this up again because I thought a lot about it from the earlier house shows. I think the problem we have is opponents. He's working with a lot of dregs. I mean, let's go back. He became king in what, June? So what was he at the July house show? He wrestled SD Jones, haha, I know everyone's going to make an SD Jones joke, but that match was, and then he didn't do much at WrestleFest, he wrestled Sam Houston, I mean, good grief, and then SummerSlam, he's not at SummerSlam, and then here he wrestles JYD, so since he's become king, he's had to face SD Jones, at least on in our local world, SD Jones, Sam Houston, and the Junkyard Dog. So as much as in-ring Haku has been a bit of a struggle, he's not being given any favors with the fucking dregs that he's had to deal with.
No, definitely not.
Why can't he get, I don't know, what's a good athletic baby face? Why not Haku and Morocco? That would not be a bad match. Mm. Morocco has a good run as a baby face. I mean, obviously now he's kind of tailing off.
I think you're pausing. I think you're pausing there shows, to me anyway, and John, what your take when you talk about the match, there's kind of a gap right now on the face side. You have the top guys, Savage, Hogan, and I think Jake is like fringe. And then you got like the lower tier, like a Coco and a Hercules and these other guys. But where is like that mid group? Like, you know, we had a pretty robust group over the last year.
Would you put Duggan?
Yeah. Maybe Duggan's in that group, right? Duggan probably. Like, I'm thinking like over the last couple of years, we had like Steamboat, Tito.
Right. Yep.
You know, Jake before he kind of elevated. So it's like we had, it just seemed like there was guys you could throw out to be in these feuds, even Morocco. But it seems like that middle class is kind of gone, besides maybe a Duggan, and depends on where you saw Jake. But with Tito going to tag, guys getting phased out, you know, Patera, Morocco, like these guys are all gone. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely like this overhaul of the mid card happening, and you can kind of see the lack of depth all of a sudden is glaring. I mean, just look at SummerSlam. You know, it's either tags or it's guys that are on their way out the door, Patera, JYD, Morocco. Like these guys are all cooked. And other than that, it's just the Sam Houston Coco tier, which is way down. So it's, we'll see how they replenish, but there's clearly a working class gap here on this side. And, you know, we'll see if the Survivor Series main event when they do that match.
Yeah,
that we're missing that middle tier. But John, I'm sorry, Scott, you done with the match? Or?
I got one quick thing, and then I'll pass it to John. I think the problem here is a lot of guys are out the door, and the one guy that he could have worked with, but the problem now is he has a belt, was the Ultimate Warrior. Now, if Warrior wasn't the IC champ, you could have put him in here in a battle with Haku, but now he's champion, so now he's stuck with fucking Karen Honky's ass for a couple months, and he's off the list. So you could have, the only guy I could think of that maybe you could have stuck in here is a guy I just mentioned a second ago, and that's Duggan. And I know they do have some matches in 89, but yeah, there's definitely, John, a gap in the roster at the moment on the babyface side. There's a myriad of tremendous heels that we don't have a problem with, from, you know, Hennig to Rude and all, you know, all these tremendous heels. But the problem is, JR is right. After our top level guys, we have this huge hole.
And this is a big reverse too, because if you remember, like a year ago, I feel like we were saying the opposite, right? Weren't we saying, we were sitting here saying, "Oh, we have all these faces with no heels for them to fight." But go ahead. Yeah, I just wanted to.
But the problem is all those heels got old very fast. Guys Morocco and these guys, we had Patera and all these guys, and it seemed like 87 into 88 they all just got very old and kind of dated. And so anyway, John, your thoughts on the match and your thoughts on how the face side looks right now in that mid card.
It looks like they were still planning to keep JYD around, because they protected him. And,
oh, that was the worst, too. I forgot.
Yeah, the finish. They protected him at the finish. So they're not treating him like we saw with SummerSlam, where Patera and Morocco did definite jobs and are definitely being cast aside. So I don't know if they still have plans for him or to think to build him, but they didn't do Haku any favors, because there was a definite DQ where JYD was dominant at the end. So
that, and like we said, too, I mean, he's supposed to be at Survivor Series. So they clearly weren't expecting him to leave because he's announced with that match. And I don't know if the fact that he's replaced even gets announced beforehand, or if it's just like that night, he just, you know, doesn't show up. So,
yeah, I guess they were trying to juice him for what he did in the past, but there wasn't much left in the tank.
Yeah, it just says Brian Blair replaces JYD, who was supposed to be part of the team but left. That's all it says. Yeah. And then Blair left, too.
So. Yeah, but I can't just fathom how they – good call, John, for mentioning that, because I was stunned that they protected. How does Haku not win that match clean? That's outrageous. It's ridiculous. Yeah, not doing him any favors.
Especially with Bobby. Bobby showed up, too. So, and Bobby was very active, so they should have gave him the win. Yeah, it's only started. It was too long. Definitely, but I like the commentary, which was under the radar. It was underrated. Trongard's not too bad, and as we said, superstar, he gets shit on, but he's starting to grow. He's starting to grow on you, and with the Lord. Them three were a good combo. They were very entertaining. When Superstar was talking about the latissimi dorside, and he was out, he dented at least 35 fenders on the way to MSG, brother. I mean, he was corny, but I guess they had to do that because this is such a long match.
I was wondering if like Gorilla was handing him because it slips here. Mention these muscles. Mention these body parts.
Yeah, and then when. Superstar freaked out when Haku got in the karate stance, and Lord Alvarez says, "Yes, Superstar, you're familiar with the martial arts." And, like, he had to remind us of Superstar's horrible fucking karate gimmick phase, man. When he was all friggin' soft when he came back, so.
Awful.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Okay. It doesn't get much better. Up next, yeah. We have. Brian Blair taking on Dino Bravo. And Scott, actually, is this it for Blair for us too? I don't think the Bees, I don't think we see them again, and then he's gone by Survivor Series, so this might be it for him too.
Yeah, I'm looking ahead to our matches. Let me. I don't see him in October. He's not on that Sarian's main event. He's definitely not at Survivor Series. I think he's, yeah. Alex, we'll get more into I actually read on how he got fired or why he got fired.
Okay.
It's hard to – I looked it up when I was watching the show the other day.
Well, this is, we can talk about it now. This is it for him. So he leaves the WWF in 88, gets back into wrestling in 90 with the AWA, which is just in his dying days. Then he goes to the UWF, Herb Abrams. He's there for a bit. And then pretty much works the indies almost until the current day. Like him and the Bees are working comic cons and the autograph stuff and – whatnot, and I think he's still having a match here or there, so he's still going. And of course, he got into politics as well. And you can hear about him more about his life with the Kevin Kelly Show, the defunct Kevin Kelly Show. But the archives are all up on the PlayStation Nation podcast feed, PlayStation Wrestling podcast feed. If you check that out, Kevin interviewed him, and he got all into his Hazel's Honey Nut and also the bullshit. He was a very interesting guy. But anyway, so you can learn a lot about Blair and what he has going on today on that show if you seek that out. In the archives, but God, Scott, what did you find about why he left?
He apparently would not jot. Well, he apparently was fired on the spot at a live event because he would not job to a certain team that would make its debut very soon in the World Wrestling Federation. Let's just say they were a team that came up north and would end up being a tremendous tag team over the next year once they debut here. But let's just say that he said he would not lay down for either of those guys at a live event. So Vince fired him on the spot.
Yeah, and it also says he had claimed that the team had been practiced the titles three times, been promised the titles three times by Vince, and he never kept those promises. And then, yes, like you said, he refused to lay down. He didn't want to become a heel, so he just refused all of it and walked. That's what he said. Brunzel Blair later complained about WWF owner Vince, who continued to merchandise products of the Killer Bees without their compensation. So seems like a lot of issues between the two of them. And, I mean, he's a guy that's never returned or resurfaced. You never see him anywhere WWF related. Not that he had a super high profile. But all right, so this is his final match. He's working against Dino Bravo. Things not looking up at all. Blair comes out to a tepid welcome. Bravo ambles out. He's solo tonight without that useless piece of shit, Frenchie Martin. Bravo draws a Billy as the crowd chants USA. We get a bunch of posturing and a quick little flurry from Blair as Al breaks down the strategy for the B. Blair keeps on Dino, eventually twisting into a side headlock. Blair gives a clean break in the corner, which pisses off Rod. He does not like that. Blair works the leg now as Al says, nice guys come in last, and that's why Bravo does so well. Bravo twists into a bow and arrow, but Dino punches free. Blair takes him down as Al says Dino is slow and ponderous in his moves. That's a nice way to say it. Blair now goes to an Indian deathlock as he empties out his playbook. Blair keeps pounding the leg as Al says he's working the Netherlands of Bravo. Bravo eventually catches Blair and hits a shinbreaker and then goes to a chinlock to grab his breath. Bravo sluggishly works the back as Blair does whatever he can to grab pin attempts, getting one real close one on a backslide. Bravo kicks Blair outside and prances around before landing a hard boot to the face. Rod calls it the squared ring, which he'll say a few times tonight, which made me laugh every time. Bravo won't let Blair back in. Blair sneaks under the ring and emerges on the other side, attacks Dino from behind, slugging away with punches. Blair lands a pair of atomic drops and gets two on a clothesline. Bravo reverses a whip, catches Blair coming in, hits a side suplex for the win. So slow, going nowhere. Blair was game, but Bravo just gives nothing and slops his way through his offense. Just completely boring, especially after that last match. This was just such a fucking slog. I went one star again, maybe a touch generous, but I thought Blair worked hard. I was kind of hoping they were going to do some kind of mask thing when he went under the ring. Like he thinks like Blair's, Brunzel's there, but it's really just him just like to fuck with Bravo. But, anyway, he did not. So one star for me, John.
Yeah, me too. You stole just about all my thunder. I had the same thing about, Blair going under the rope and, you figured he'd come out with the Killer Bee stuff. So. Or I don't know what was going on. He just came out the other side.
Yeah.
He thought maybe Brunzel would pop up or something.
Some trickeration.
Yeah. And I guess the Lord must have been listening to Casey Kasem when he was saying he's very slow and ponderous. I wanted to say, fucking ponderous, man. But damn, Bravo, with the long, stupid, like, camel clutch type, that was the move wasn't even, like, didn't even look devastating. And Bravo was just, you know, making his stupid faces and over-exaggerated selling. And this is another one-star rough one, Scott.
Yeah, I gave it a star as well. And, I mean, if you thought the last match was long, oh, my God. This one was 13:45. The previous one was 14:45. So we were given some ponderous length matches.
Oh, God.
Dog death dedications.
I wonder why they hid this thing on a Thursday. Like, no, the card sucks.
And also, Mills Lame was the fucking ref there again. He
Mills Lame. Mills Lame. But Dino Bravo is one of the most – I mean, it's amazing how talentless he really is. He is horrible. He's absolutely horrible.
He's so slow and just – botchy.
He's terrible, and he has no storyline. He has no psychology skills. He's in this like submission move, kind of like a bow and arrow almost that Blair has him in. He gets out of it. He like elbows him in the head, gets up, and then just drops an elbow. Like he doesn't sell it. He doesn't like rub his back. Oh, that was tough. No, he just gets up and just keeps wrestling as if nothing was wrong. It absolutely horrible at everything. Mm-hmm. Blair did the best he could, but I mean this match is just it's just fucking trash. And Bravo's just awful. He's just awful. Frenchie, no Frenchie. Who gives a shit?
The worst part is we haven't really even hit Bravo's like peak push yet. You know what I mean? Like we got the weightlifting stuff and everything else. It's kind of started, but he's like his like biggest year is probably what 89. So
yeah,
as far as just being shoved. So we'll see much more of him for a while, sadly.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, this match is just garbage. As I mentioned, earlier we were talking about the tag division. Obviously here's one case. Blair is here. Brunzel was down in Miami at the other house show. So obviously Vince thinks nothing of these guys anymore. Mm-hmm. Splitting them up instead of giving them.
They're pretty much done as a team. I mean,
yeah,
I wonder if like all the shit had already gone down with Blair. You know, if he was just kind of riding out the string already, or
he's
also scheduled for Survivor Series, so maybe not yet. But they must have already been having their issues, is my guess.
Yeah, but I mean, this match is just is horrible. Just everybody. I don't know if it's just like a SummerSlam hangover, but I feel like there's no juice in these matches. Mm-hmm. Nobody's really trying hard. I don't know. It was just this was not good. Yeah. And I think we're seeing a lot of guys just getting exposed. It's just not that good. Dino Bravo's just not good.
No, GYD definitely. Is cooked. And I think we're also in the middle of the purge. Like, the overhaul of the roster is happening as we're speaking. So we're seeing, like, the younger, hotter talent is just starting to leak in, and the old stuff is being flushed away, and everyone else is kind of slotting in. So, like, you can tell like, there's a lot of just upheaval and confusion around the roster as a whole right now, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And we need to start filling some slots because – the middle of these shows are just going to get worse and worse if we just keep having the same talentless stiffs taking on guys that are out the door and are half trying and, you know, just taking the check and going to the pay window and moving on. So these last two matches were a clear example of that. And sadly, guys like Haku are having to pay the price for it. It's unfortunate.
All right, let's get to our next match, which is the World Wrestling Federation heavyweight title match. It is Macho Man Randy Savage taking on Andre the Giant. Real cool match here. Andre's getting his title match despite the SummerSlam loss and, you know, kind of thinking that the whole Mega Powers, Mega Bucks thing may be dead. But we swerve a bit with Andre still staying up in the main event tier. getting that shot against Savage. Andre comes out with Bobby, swaggering as always, cool and collected. Great heat. The crowd gives a raucous welcome to Savage and Liz, looking perfect as always. Billy wonders why Liz would put Savage in a match like this. Bobby goes at Liz, but Savage comes out to block him. Bobby keeps stalking Liz until Pat Patterson shows up, makes him back off in a bit of a wild scene. The argument continues, and Pat eventually threatens to toss him out, and Fink announces that unless Bobby leaves, Andre will be DQ'd, and Bobby will be fined and suspended. Bobby just flips out as Fink starts counting, and the crowd is going nuts. Al says Liz should be thrown out too, but the ref just tells her to stand there and not move. Andre chokes away as we finally get started and slugs away at the champ with heavy punches and chops. Andre continues to dominate with clubbing blows, even though he seems distracted by Liz here and there. Savage finds a seam, catches Andre with a clothesline that knocks the giant back and tied into the ropes. Savage chokes and punches the bound giant until the ref finally unties him and he lands some chops. Savage keeps coming and loading with wild axe blows and elbows as Andre staggering all around. Savage goes up and hits a double axe and both men fall to the mat to a huge pop. Savage goes up again but comes up empty on a big elbow and Andre rolls outside. Liz tries to get on the apron, but Andre grabs her leg and hangs on until Savage comes out and drills him into the post and the bell sounds for a double countout. Billy thinks Liz's ankle may be broken. Andre gets in the ring and staggers around and grabs the belt as Savage carries Liz to the back in just a wild, wild, chaotic scene and match. The crowd is nuts. Everyone's frantic from Bobby on down. The ref is also real extra here, too. He grabs the mic and tells Andre to give the belt back. He's out of his fucking mind. Andre chokes him out instead, demands him to announce him as the new world champion, and the ref finally capitulates. Fink then announces Andre as having been fined as he stomps around the ring with the title. Andre is just a fucking madman monster. An animal in this great match and segment, a hidden gem, the whole thing. I went 3 stars, but this thing is well worth a watch if you can find it. Just the whole Andre just yanking on Liz's ankle and holding on, and just the post match is just crazy where he's just choking the ref and just, he's just snapped, and it's great heel work. Andre continues to be my MVP of 88, shockingly enough, because I think when most people think of Andre in 88, I think they think of him on the back nine. And you know, they think of four and him kind of lumbering, but he has been the man in everything we've watched in 88, Scott.
Indeed. You actually shortchanged yourself, JR. You said 3. You actually gave it 3.5.
Oh, okay.
According to our scoreboard.
Different grades on different docs here. So.
Oh, yes, 3.5. And I actually gave it a 4. It's fantastic. You've got two guys, and we all know kind of historically that Andre was not the biggest Savage fan.
Mm-hmm.
No baby oil. But he didn't actually look very, very oily, so maybe Savage kind of wised up.
Right.
Your match time, 9:57. And at this point, I mean, I think Savage was always comfortable as champion. But since SummerSlam and kind of, you know, taking a little bit of Hogan's shine that he was offering, Savage has just been amazing. He loves the spotlight. He's perfect in this role. I think he is a great World Wrestling Federation champion. But let's talk about that. Let's talk about the boss for a minute. He is out of his mind right now in terms of selling the character, selling everything, putting everything over. He was just like, he was incensed in that ring after that match. And he had the crowd utterly captivated. It's fucking Andre, guys. You know, like, you all you need to do is just see him there and he brings the eyes to him. The eyes go wherever he is. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. Him holding the belt. You're almost thinking, shit, he's just going to take the belt and be champion. And who's going to stop him? Just amazing. Andre knows that he has to. Andre knew at that point that he had to take advantage of the other assets he had as a performer besides the in-ring. Because we knew that was not going to get any better. In fact, it was going to get worse through no fault of his own. So he had to take advantage of the other assets that have made him arguably one of the 10 or 15 greatest superstars of all time. And you could see on WWE, on PlaceToBeNation.com where he was on our top 100 lists because he's that good. But at this point, he needed to find other assets to accentuate the great character that he is. And his ability to just sell things. And I mean, he's shoving reps and he's getting in Pat's face. And I mean, it's outrageous. And you're thinking, wow, this might be a legitimate, world title feud. As a matter of fact, you could think that maybe Andre could win the title legit and hold it for a couple months, or maybe not.
Right.
But you never know. With Andre, you just don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a threat at any moment.
You know?
destroy you or take a title.
I mean, he was shoving refs, and I mean, it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. And I just Savage is just tremendous. And the pulling of Elizabeth's foot and the heel work. And this was the match, John, where you were talking about the announcing. I actually really like the announcing in this match. Because even, you know, I like how Alfred kind of does the heel tint a little bit with the other two guys. And he's like, you know, Elizabeth should be booted too. Why isn't she being booted, kind of thing. It was just everything about this whole package, from the match, the announcing, the post-match. Everything about this was great.
Yeah, I love when the superstar says, Macho should be using his feet on that ugly face of the giant. He was really getting into it. But this was quite the spectacle. They did an expert job at stretching this whole thing out and making every minute entertaining to camouflage the fact that they can only go in the ring, that Andre can only, you know, do so many things in the ring for a few minutes. But they took the time to make everything else so entertaining between Bobby and just from the very beginning, that classic hallway entrance. You see the MSG hallway, and actually on the way right before the curtain, Andre like yells at somebody, says, "Next time, don't laugh at me," to somebody off camera.
Yeah,
which was a nice little touch. And then the Brain takes a long time. He's harassing Liz, and then the crowd pops up when Patterson kicked him out. And then when the match started, Andre was complaining, saying, "She should leave too. She should leave too." It's like he's scared of Elizabeth. Such a spectacle, man.
Yeah, it really was.
And it's only
Stupid ref. Yeah. He didn't get the hint after he almost got the life choked out of him. he goes over to tell Finkel, Andre's going to get a heavy fine. It's like dude, you're lucky you're alive.
I know.
And I don't know if like any of this would have worked with anyone but Andre at this point. I mean, just like he's just this menace, and the evolution of his heel turn has been real fun to watch too. Because it starts as like he just kind of gets pushed in because he feels he never get the respect from Hogan, and Bobby kind of poisons the Ben. But even through three, he's just kind of all about just like getting his shot, right? And then it becomes more and more obsession with beating Hogan and fucking Hogan. And, like, that builds and builds. And he finally screws him in the main event. And then he, like, keeps trying to beat Hogan, and he can't. And then he goes with DiBiase and then back with Bobby. And now he's just, like, lost his mind. He's just, like, a fucking madman now, where what started as just a quest for the world title has just driven him to
madness.
Yeah, just driven him off the ledge. Like, he's just gone. And now he's this animal that's just out there destroying whatever's in his way and bitching, and he's laughing and yelling at everyone. He's just maniacal. He's just completely lost his mind. And it's been like a fun watch to see him just devolve into this, you know, madman. I mean, that's the best way to say it, is this madman. And I don't think anyone else in the promotion at this point could have had like this match with this, like, such a threat and so evil and so angry and so real as Andre right now is providing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. He's got that extra thing that nobody else right now on the heel side has. So,
and it was just great camera work. That shot of him just wrenching that big friggin' giant hand, just wrenching Liz's ankle, and that was great camera work.
Huge. Well, on that note, why don't we take a break? I think it's safe to say, JR, that this last match has saved this show from becoming a Pete Schirmacher special. So.
Yeah, we'll see how much it saved it. We still got a ways to go. But it's temporarily giving it some life support for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, John, I mean, before this match, I mean, this show was a bull circler. But I think this last one kind of kept it on life support a little bit. I agree.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right, well, we take a break here on 501. When we return, we have, four more matches, including the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, our new champion, in a rematch from SummerSlam, and much more. But first, a new break, because...
Oh, yeah, right. Monster
in my pants, and it does a naughty dance. When it sees the light of day, you can hear the people say,
"Oh, no, a monster! Oh, no, a monster! Oh, no, oh, 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 no, a giant monster! Monster!"
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place Beat Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here, and we want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceBeatNation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Beat Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTBN Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post-Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceBeatNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceBeatNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceBeatNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
Song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy.
Place of a Nation, I'm tired. Welcome back. Welcome back. You can hear that dog dying in the background. That's John D'Amato. He's here with us. As is Scott Criscolo. On episode 501 of the Place to Be podcast. And the reason I'm tired is, was this McGregor fight last night with Khabib. This was, you know, just descended into absurdity by the end. Got to bed late, of course, with a 3-year-old. You don't ever sleep in, so I'm running on near empty. But you know what? I'm here talking wrestling with you guys, and all I can think of is just don't worry about it. Just be happy. And it's fitting because that is the number one song in the nation this week in 1988. Bobby McFerrin, as you can hear those two clowns in the background, were attempting to sing as we were coming in for this break. You would have heard it as well. That does transition us to Scott Criscolo with this week's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And indeed, Bobby McFerrin from the movie Cocktail and the number one song in the country. Moved up 3 spots. It was number 4 last week. And it is the number one song in the country. Don't Worry, Be Happy. I never heard of him before this song. But he is the number one song in the country from the Cocktail soundtrack. And number 2, arguably one of my favorite songs of the decade from one of my favorite albums of the decade, and that is Little Guns N' Roses, Little Sweet Child of Mine from Appetite for Destruction. Again, one of my favorite songs and one of my favorite albums. Taylor Dane. Love Taylor Dane. I heard that song today on 80s on 8. I think they were doing an 88 countdown, as a matter of fact.
They were.
Might have been. It was this week, I think, this current week, October. So.
Oh, yeah, huh? So not too far off, only a week later.
I know, right? So I heard Taylor Dane always.
Yeah, you're right. It was 88. Yep, you're definitely right.
Yeah, so she's at number 3 with I'll Always Love You. Number 4, a little Simply Irresistible, Robert Palmer. Number 5, Love Bites by Def Leppard. Number 6, Perfect World by Huey Lewis and the News. I didn't think Huey Lewis had top 10 hits in 88. I thought he fizzled out in like 86. Number 7, One Good Woman by Peter Cetera. Number 8, If It Isn't Love by New Edition. Oh, they'll be breaking up soon. Number 9, Nobody's Fool, the theme from Caddyshack 2 by Kenny Loggins. Kenny, bad move selling out so you could put a song on that piece of crap. And then number 10, Don't Be Cruel, the remake, or the cover, by Cheap Trick. So there's your top 10, which was the previous... Oh, God. It's speaking of scum. That was the top 10 the previous Saturday, the 24th of September, 1988. And again, your number one song was Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin. All right, JR, we will hustle quickly here. Okay. Four movies came out the previous Friday, the 23rd mm-hmm. of September. And the first one is called Gorillas in the Mist.
Oh, boy.
It's actually right. a very, very well-known movie at the time.
It was. Occupational therapist Diane Fossey is inspired by anthropologist Louis Leakey to devote her life to the study of primates. To this end, she writes ceaselessly for him to create a job cataloging and studying the rare mountain gorillas of Africa. With some effort, she manages to convince Leakey of her conviction and devotion to the cause at hand after personally approaching him after following a lecture in Louisville, Kentucky, on his part in 1966, starring Sigourney Weaver, Brian Brown, Julie Harris, anyone else? Two people named Ian, spelled I-A-I-N, so there you go. Helen Frazier, David Maddock.
Sigourney Weaver post Aliens. Mm-hmm. So. All right, your next film, a little coming-of-age action, starring, two very well-known actors at the time. The movie is called Kansas. Like the school, or the state.
I was going to say, like the school. Let me find the movie here, Kansas. There's a lot going on under the words Kansas. Yeah. A young man named Wade Corey is going to a wedding. On the way, he meets a hobo who forces him into a bank robbery. While hiding the money they stole under a bridge, the governor's car goes off the bridge. When Wade saves the governor's daughter from the car, he becomes a hero. Ebert and Siskel both gave this a thumbs down. Starring Matt Dillon, Andrew McCarthy, Leslie Hope, Kara Sedgwick, Arlen Dean Snyder. That's all. Five people listed. Hollywood Video says it was uneven, although Matt Dillon's performance was given good reviews.
So there we go. All right, next.
Siskel and Ebert said it was a plot recycled from Horatio Alger novels.
Yeah. Tried to be so cerebral. The third one, a biographical film called Patty Hearst. Yes, that Patty Hearst.
Big week here. It's Pat Hearst. She's a golfer.
No, Patty with a Y. And it says film. It'll just say film. Pat Hearst. Pat Hearst on the 18th hole.
Patty Hearst is a 1988 American biographical film directed by Paul Schrader, stars Natasha Richardson as Hearst Corporation heiress Patricia Hearst, and Ving Rhames as Sibyanese Liberation Army leader Sinke. It's based on Hearst's 1982 autobiography, Every Secret Thing. The film depicts the kidnapping of student Patty Hearst, her transformation to an active follower of the SLA after long-lasting imprisonment, and process of purported brainwashing, and her final arrest after a series of armed robberies. Starring, like we mentioned above, Ving Rhames, Natasha Richardson, William Forsythe, Francis Fisher, Jodie Long, Dana Delaney, Jeff Amata, Destiny Reyes-Alston, in case you're curious.
By the way, this is, 5 years before Pulp Fiction, Ving Rhames.
Mm-hmm.
Time probably in relative unknown. And finally, the last movie that came out is called Sweetheart's Dance.
Hmm.
One of those comedies from the late 80s.
One of those.
Those.
It's Halloween. New England contractor Willie Boone, married to his high school sweetheart Sandra and the father of three children, feels smothered after 15 years of the same routine and facing a midlife crisis. His best friend, local school board president Sam Manners, is on the verge of starting a relationship with Adi Nims, a recent transplant from Florida and new teacher at the grade school. During Thanksgiving dinner, Willie and Sandra have a minor disagreement that prompts him to leave his family and move into a mobile home to sort through his feelings of unrest. Starring Don Johnson, Susan Sarandon, Jeff Daniels, Elizabeth Perkins, Kate Reed, Bernie Sanders. He's in this as Bernie.
As himself? Oh my God, it is him.
It is him. He's in it, yeah.
But he gave all his money away and forced everyone else to too. All right, so there you go. So there's all the music. There's all the movies that came out on that previous Friday, the 23rd.
That's a pretty good cast in that shit movie.
It really was, right? A big late 80s run right there.
Made $9 right. million. Dollars. $9 million. Under box office section of Wikipedia, it says the film is not a box office success.
I know, yes. All right, quick baseball check because we're coming to the end of the season. Let's see. The Yankees beat the Orioles 5-1. The Mets did not play. Red Sox beat the Indians 12-0. The only division that's still in limbo is the American League East. The Red Sox lead Milwaukee by 3. Everything else is decided. Oakland won the AL West. The Mets won the East. And the Dodgers won the West. So our next pop culture corner, mm-hmm. we will delve into the 1988 Major League playoffs. All right. But of course, for the first time in a while, more importantly here on Pop Culture Corner, it is indeed time to take the field.
Lies.
All right. So, JR.
Yes.
As we've seen over the last two NFL seasons of picks, 1986, 1987, you have clearly shown your superiority over one Kelly Nelson Esquire.
Yeah, he sucks at trivia and NFL picks.
So, we have decided... We're going to do something a little different. It's going to do. It's going to be. We're going to do something a little different because we always have different people on the Place to Be podcast during mm-hmm. our Vintage Vault Refresh. It's going to be called JR versus the Field.
Oh, okay.
So what we're going to do is, with every guest, of course, starting tonight with Mr. Tomato, you will go up against whoever our guest will be, whether it's John, Pete, Peter Winston, Kelly. Yep. Jenny, whoever. And at the end of the year, at the end of the season, we'll see if cumulatively the field can beat you. Because clearly Kelly needs help because he can't do it by himself.
Yeah.
So here we go. Of course, it is the 1988 NFL season. The Washington Redskins are your defending champions. This is week 4, which took place the previous Sunday, the 25th. Mr. D'Amato, are you ready?
The field is ready.
The field is ready. Because you're going to get a few chances during the field. So here we go. All right, we begin at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. The Packers hosting the Chicago Bears. JR?
I will take the Bears.
Okay. John?
I'll go with the home team, the Packers.
All right. Well, the Bears go into Lambeau and get the
Son
win 24-6. So
already
off, he's going to start. Already off. Just starts killing with a bit.
88. What is that? Majkowski? Oh, damn.
Nope. Randy Wright was the quarterback.
Wright is wrong. Fuck.
And of course, the Bears had Walter Payton's replacement. What's his name? Not Gary Anderson. The heck was his name? I can't remember his name. Anderson was the last. Matsui. Let's go to the Silverdome. The real one, not Hulk Hogan's world. The Silverdome in Pontiac, where the J-E-T-S Jets, taking on the Lions, Mr. D'Amato.
There's no way the Jets win in Detroit.
I'm saying it was a repeat of 2018, opening the season up. The Jets go in and route the Lions.
Kenny O'Brien, 253 yards.
Gotta
Jets win, 17-10.
Oof.
You are no better than Kelly. Anyway, let's go down to the Holy Roof, otherwise known as Texas Stadium, in Irving. The Cowboys host the Atlanta Falcons, JR.
I'm going to take the Falcons in this one.
Yeah. John?
I'm going to go with your sucky Cowboys.
Well, your sucky Cowboys got you on the scoreboard finally, you bum.
Thank God.
Walter, 96 yards on the ground. Cowboys win 26-20.
And Atlanta still has one on the road in a big game. Yes. Let's go to the Hoosier. Duke and Chad Campbell.
Let's go to the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis. The Colts hosting the Miami Dolphins, Mr. D'Amato.
I will go with the Marinos, the Dolphins.
Yeah, I'll take the Fins, too. We're going 5-11 this year.
Dan Marino with 276 yards passing, but the Colts eke it out.
Wow.
13.
Oof.
There we go. To Riverfront we go. The Battle of Ohio. The Bengals host the Browns, JR.
I'll take the Brownies.
Okay.
I'll go with the Bengals. Andy Dalton wasn't there to fuck it up yet.
Put the stink on him.
No, that was actually Boomer Esiason. And it was also Boomer Esiason's, I believe this was his MVP season. Bengals nice. Win at home, 24-17.
Nice, Boomer. Thank you.
We go to the Astrodome in Houston, where the Oilers host the New England Patriots, Mr. D'Amato.
We go with the Oilers. The Patriots haven't started taping the other team's practices yet.
Bill Belichick had been banging wives, but it was only in New York, not New England yet. So I will go with Houston.
Oilers win 31-6.
Nice.
All right. Let's go to Buffalo, where the Bills host the Pittsburgh Steelers, JR.
Yeah, I'll go Buffalo.
Okay. Yeah, me too. This is what, the Bubby Brister era? Yeah, the Steelers, I'll go with Buffalo.
Well, Bubby Brister did throw for 330 yards in this game, but the Bills win 36-28. Let's go to the Superdome in New Orleans, the Saints hosting Tampa Bay. Mr. D'Amato.
Oof. It's a grim game.
Oof. The Saints, who is quarterback? I'll go with Tampa Bay.
Yeah, me too.
Vinny Testaverde was quarterbacking Tampa. I believe this was Bobby Hebert for the Saints. Saints win at home 13-9. So as you can tell by the score, it was a dark game.
Oh, God.
Jeez. And nobody understood what the fuck Bobby Hebert said in the post-game press conference.
When he used to play for the Memphis Showboats? I played for some team in the U.S.
Sorry, Jacob Williams. Sorry, Jambalaya Jake.
In a game that was actually played today in 2018, the Vikings host the Eagles in the Metrodome in Minneapolis, JR.
I'm taking the Eagles.
Just like today, I'll take the Vikings.
Vikings eke it out at home, 23-21.
Coming back. Coming back here.
In their first... coming back.
So you were actually watching this shit, though. For me, this is all shot in the dark.
Well, in their first season in a new city, they left St. Louis. The Cardinals were the Phoenix Cardinals in this first season, and they host the Washington Redskins, JR. I'm sorry, Mr. D'Amato, you're first.
I have to go with the Redskins. This sounds like a Neil Lomax fart bomb.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Same.
Cardinals win 30-21. Even though Mark Rippon threw for 303 yards, the Cardinals win at home. Let's go to Seattle. Let's go to the Kingdom, where the Seahawks host the 49ers, JR.
Niner.
Yeah, Niners.
Yes, Joe Montana. 302 yards passing. Niners win big 38-7. To the Meadowlands, Mr. D'Amato, and your Giants against the Los Angeles Rams.
Oof, 89. I'll go with the G-Man.
Yeah, I'll take the Giants at home.
Well, Phil Simms did throw for 309 yards, but the Rams win on the road.
Fucking Flipper Anderson.
45-31. The Rams.
Oof.
We go to Arrowhead.
Just like Chiefs today's defense.
We go to Arrowhead. The Chiefs host the San Diego Chargers.
Chiefs at home always.
Yes, Chiefs. Things don't change much.
You know, the Chiefs quarterback, by the way, was Steve DeBerg.
That was Dave Craig.
Chargers win on the road, 24.
God. Terrible week.
And finally, Monday night at Mile High, the Broncos host the Los Angeles Raiders. Who are we up to? 10 to John.
I'll say the autumn wind is a Raider.
Right, I'm going Denver.
In his first game as a Bronco, since leaving the Cowboys, Tony Dorsett at 119 yards rushing, but Raiders win in overtime.
All right, I need Kelly back so I can get back on the winning track.
Come on, I missed like seven games.
There we go. All right. And a historical event occurred on this day. If you guys remember, it was actually an MSG house show in January of 86, one of the saddest days in American history when the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded. Well, on this day, December 29th, 1988, was the first Space Shuttle mission since that day. Space Shuttle Discovery made its premier voyage. So, there we go. One house show to another house show. And finally, we had a birthday on this day. One of the NBA's best players right now was born on this date, September 29th, 1988, in Washington, D.C. You want to take a guess, Mr. D'Amato? currently plays for your defending world champion?
Steph Curry?
Golden State Warriors. Incorrect. JR, who's the other guy on the team?
Clay Thompson.
No. Mr. Kevin Durant was born on this day.
30.
November 29, 1988. 30 years old. And that is your very meaty pop culture. Or as what did Lord Alfred say earlier? Short and supple. Short and
stubby. It is very stubby. All right, let's get back to it here. Sean Mooney's in the back with Dino Bravo. So he has an easy time with Blair and wants Jim Duggan next to show the U.S. heroes nothing next to him. Bravo says the only thing he likes about America is brother love. Mooney then talks to the Rockers. They came here to prove they're the greatest tag team in the world. And now with the win tonight, they have earned a tag team title match. Michael says they're tag specialists and aren't the roughest or toughest, but they never stay down and never been beaten. They had the best record of any team, and the champs' days are numbered. Mooney's in with Andre the Giant, Bobby Heenan. Andre says he's the new world champion and demands Mooney say it as well. Heenan says Savage and others have to learn their lessons and says Andre has never been defeated and is world champion. Andre blames Tunney for always getting screwed despite beating the champs. This is a great Andre promo. Continues to just be on fire. Sean's in with Brutus Beefcake, who says his scars have healed, but his mental scars remain. Ron Bass made a mistake by not finishing the job. Bass is at the top of his list as he talks about what he's going to do to the Outlaw, including cutting him bald. Mooney then talks to Honky and Jimmy Hart. Jimmy says they were ripped off at SummerSlam, and Honky says he's possessed with getting the title back, and he's the greatest of all time. That brings us to our next match. And another huge debut here tonight, and that is the debut.
Wait, hold up. Did you I'm sorry, Jay. Did you happen to catch the Rockers when Marty said the demos may be good, big, but the Rockers are a couple speedballs coming right
out. That's what it was. All right.
The jokes just write themselves.
So. Okay, there was the speedball. Okay, it was there. I thought it was during the JYD match, but no, it was in that promo. I'm thinking, yeah, because you're about to go do one for six.
Good celebratory one.
Can't make it up.
All right. Huge debut next, guys, as the man who was born Richard Allen on September 24th, 1963, in Jacksonville, Florida.
Huge debut.
Named under the gimmick name of Sandy Beach. In the spring of 1988, while preparing to enter the police academy of the wonderful Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, Allen had a minor role in the 1989 action film No Holds Barred. Starring
Hulk Hogan. I thought you could say he was in Police Academy. He would have fit right in.
He definitely looked like one of the guys that'd be like one of the Captain Harris's like fucking yes men thugs.
Yeah, Stooge,
you know,
Colton and the other schmuck. Yeah.
He gained the attention of WWF officials during filming. He rejected football scholarships from Florida State and Georgia Southern in order to start working for the company as a preliminary wrestler. Imagine making that decision. He was trained at the famed Gleason's Gym alongside Jason Knight, Falcon Koparis, the Shark Attack Kid, Primo Canera III, and Tiger Khan. That's a fucking class. I think there's a reason you don't hear much about Gleason's Gym anymore. Probably why. Allen made his WWF debut on August 14th, 88, defeating the Gladiator at a house show in Athens, Alabama. Greg Phillips was in attendance, I think, for that one. Sandy fucking Beach taking on good old Scott Casey. Graham says backstage is in turmoil after their last match, and this is the definition, textbook definition, of a post-intermission bout. Graham giggles over Sandy's name, and he totally looks like Sting as he walks to the ring on a wide shot. Like, they were definitely trying to like trick people into thinking it was Sting for a second there. And he looks like Officer Farva up close, though. Fucking Super Troopers. Al likes how Casey moves around the ring. It says Sandy looks like pansy-fied with his pink tights. And Graham, he thinks it's the funniest fucking thing he's ever heard. But yeah, he does look pansy-fied. I like that term, Brother Alfred. Brother Lordship. Graham gushes over Casey's body, says Beach is nothing but bulk right now, which is absolutely true. Drinking his liters of cola. Al and Billy discuss Sandy's hairstyle, and Billy says it's a punk hairdo like Brian Bosworth and other freaks. Beach slams Casey in an awkward way, and Graham says he's unorthodox. Beach works over Casey with some weird windmill blows, and is just real odd out there, running weird. He's all kind of stiff. Al says he has no fluid motion. He's stiff and jerky, which nails it well. Casey drags him down awkwardly as Beach is just a fucking mess. He hits a sloppy stun gun and then slings Casey to the floor, which is a decision that Al shits all over. Billy basically says that Beach has droopy tits and compares him to a female dog. Billy compares Casey's beard to John Johnson as this just slogs along, and the crowd is not thrilled at all that they paid to watch this fucking match. Beach stumbles around as the commentators basically are calling him trash. Everything is a step off, rookie-level bumps. Beach lazily kicks out at one after a suplex, and the crowd is actively turning on him. Beach eats a boot on a charge, and Casey hits a bulldog, or a steer buster, as Billy says, for the win. An utter disaster. Beach was awful. Casey did what he could, but I think Beach may be the worst guy we've seen in 1988. He did not belong here at all. He looked like he was like straight out of a fucking backyard wrestling tape in 1997 or something. Dud all the way, and just a disaster. Just a disastrous debut. Johnny, what'd you think of your boy Sandy?
Poor Sandy. He was blown up before he even got to the ring. But the commentary is worth at least a half a star between the pansified and the I don't know about the droopy tits. I think he said he's got a droopy wrist condition that that female dogs get. Man. Just unbelievable, man. Yeah, superstar brought up the Boz haircut.
And yes.
This poor Sandy. This is just awful. We never seen nothing like this. And then they tried to oversell Casey, saying, "Oh, okay, Casey looks like Don Johnson," which is a little awful also, but. Just horrible, man. Poor Sandy. They torched him, and the best. And also, Lord said, "And Sandy's breathing heavy. He's got the bit of a spare tire."
A bit. Yeah. You get the whole fucking Town Fair tire store in there.
Yeah, this is not good. Thank God this match was mercifully only 6:06. Like JR said, typical, perfect definition of a take a dump after the awesomeness. And I know you'll mention it momentarily, but this was saved by who would come out at the end of the match, but there's nothing more. I mean, it's just fucking garbage. So why don't we just move on? I think I gave it a dud like you.
It was terrible. I think he's probably the worst guy we've seen all year.
Yeah, he's fucking terrible.
We've seen George Steele wrestle multiple matches in 1988, and I mean he was working circles around fucking Sandy Beach.
Yeah, even some of our Jose Luis Rivera stinkers. But JR, as you're about to tell us, the at least the segment before break was saved by
Randy Savage coming out. Mm-hmm. Says he has signed an open contract and it's on Jack Tunney's desk. Demands Andre signs it and calls him out for someone his size messing with Liz, who is now hurt. Savage is not pleased at all and says he'll kick Andre's ass, and this just woke the crowd right up after that disaster that we just watched. And that brings us to our next match, which is a big grudge match. Brutus the Barber Beefcake taking on the Outlaw, Ron Bass. Of course, a grudge match against Bass had fucked up Brutus's big SummerSlam title rematch with the Honky Tonk Man by slicing him up with his spurs. And Bass doesn't seem to give a shit as he walks out. Brutus is locked in as he starts out to his new theme music, which he recently debuted. Bass attacks at the bell, but Beefer comes at him with a lot of fire, and the crowd is rallying him into it. Bass bails out Beefer, follows him, and slings him into some chairs. Bass throws a tantrum and then returns, but Beefer is right on top of him with an assault of punches. Bass keeps bailing and returning, but can't get any momentum going at all. Beefer grabs the scissors and then gives him a Billy to hold, and Rod tells him he has no use for them, which is kind of funny. Bass finally lands him offense, but Brutus shakes it off and comes right back at him. And they end up working in the wrong corner as Bass pops Brutus with the handle of a bullwhip. Bass starts to work through his methodical offense, including a tight pile driver for two. Bass keeps slugging away, cutting Beefer down with a hard clothesline for a near fall, and then goes to the nerve hold. Beefcake punches free and lands a big blow off the middle rope as he's fired back up. Follows with a back elbow and power slam, but doesn't cover. He hoists Bass up and then hooks a sleeper to a big pop. Bass uses the ref to leverage his way out, and as we're looking at the crowd, Bass lands a few shots, but Beefer gets a cross body block for the win. Bass immediately bails. Beefcake celebrates his first step in gaining revenge. However, Bass sneaks back in and batters him with the whip, choking him out and dragging him in another nasty attack. Bass then gets a spur, which Al says is called Bert, but the Rockers make the save. Good little match, quick and to the point. No waste of time, really, once they got rolling. And Beefcake showed a lot of fire. And I thought they did a nice job really making it feel like a grudge match. They didn't fuck around with, you know, arm bars or chin locks or, like, a feeling out. Like, they just got right to it, and Beefcake was clearly just pissed off looking for revenge. So I thought that was really good. I thought it was one of Beefcake's better singles matches. I enjoyed that aspect of it. And I think this is where we're starting to see him become, like, the Brutus Beefcake we would kind of grow into, or at least my generation would kind of grow up with, you know, with the music, and he started the longer hair, and it was just a whole package of Beefcake. starting to round in more than in early 88, where he's kind of just like a weirdo with the big bulging eyes and just kind of stomping all over the place. He's kind of just rounding more into the character most would know him as. So I went 2.5 stars on this one, Scott. I thought it was pretty fun.
I gave it 2 stars. Your match time 10:50. And I agree with you. I think Beefcake is definitely settled in now and kind of the character we know of. Ron Bass was a pretty serviceable heel. I thought this was, you know, I'm kind of glad we got this match because I feel like this was a feud that worked, you know, worked really well throughout the summer. And, you know, it directly led to other things. Obviously, you know, it affected what we were going to see in the main event of our show this evening and what happened at our last Vintage Vault. So I'm glad that we were able to actually get this match and kind of, you know, seal the thing and give Beefcake a push here. Again, I like Ron Bass, good heel, and Beefcake definitely has grown. When you get a pretty kicking entrance theme, you know that you're on, obviously, the company's radar as a plausible worker. This could have been a guy you could have had face Haku had this feud not needed to be finished. Had this feud already been finished, maybe you could have put Beefcake in the Haku match earlier in the show. Having said that, maybe they put him in later on, but this was a good opportunity for Beefcake to finish this feud off, get the best of Ron Bass, and move on. We don't have to worry about the lingering IC title stuff because, you know, Warrior's champ now, so we don't have to worry about that. And it's a good chance for Beefcake to just keep working his way and getting the crowd behind him and really becoming a top-flight babyface, John. 2 stars here, solid enough match, but Beefcake is really settling in now. As we were talking about babyfaces earlier, here's a guy that definitely can kind of be that upper tier mid card face that can put over a lot of that can be put over and can generate a lot of excitement.
Yeah, the MSG crowd always gave Brutus a lot of love, which is surprising because he's kind of like Chippendale's pretty boyish, but they always gave him love and even probably more than even he deserves with his limited move sets and his limited machinations. But this was good booking. Brutus got his revenge with the 3 count, and Bass stays strong. Gets out a little bits in, and Brutus needs the Rockers to save him. So it was a good 10-15 minutes, whatever the whole thing took.
What did you think of Bert? Bert the Spur.
Oh, Bert and Betsy?
Yeah, and this feud will continue. I think it goes into early 89, so we'll be seeing a bit more of it. But all right, next up, Tito Santana, who we haven't seen in a while at MSG, who haven't seen him since April, taking on Bad News Brown. Good heat on Brown as always. Brown attacks as he hits the ring, but Tito dodges it, hits a flurry to send Bad News scurrying. Brown returns to the squared ring, as Rod calls it, as Tito meets him with punches. Brown dodges a charge. Tito eats a buckle. Brown starts to slug away, but Tito gets his knees up on a splash and lands some punches on the mat. Tito gets a cross body block for 2 and keeps the pressure on. Rod reminds us that Bad News is undefeated as he catches Tito with his head down and punches him to the mat. Brown misses a shot, and Tito comes right back at him. And the two trade some blows until Tito slams him, hits a knee drop for 2. Brown blocks the figure 4 and then tries for an atomic drop, but Tito blocks that on landing, taking Brown down and gets a figure 4 in a nifty spot. Bad News gets the ropes to break, but Tito stomps away until Brown hits the ghetto blaster for the win. As Rod says, Tito bought the farm. Fine stuff here. Again, they didn't overstay its welcome. Tito always has good fire and offense. I enjoyed him here, and Brown was mitigated from really derailing things with Tito just kind of keeping in control and keeping the pacing up. I thought this was one of Brown's better singles matches. I actually went 2 stars on this, and which is pretty high for me for a Brown match. So I thought, you know, it was watchable. Most of his stuff isn't, and Tito's always great, and I've missed watching him at MSG, so it's been good to see him here. And obviously with Strikeforce kind of on hiatus, maybe we'll see a little bit more of him. So what'd you think of this one, John?
Yeah, they didn't hesitate to let Tito do a nice clean job to put news over. That's what they should have done with JYD. Just curious, but as usual, Tito's temper gets the best of him. He's jawing with the ref, and he gets distracted, and Bad News hits the ghetto blaster, which is it's a great finishing move. The way it comes out of nowhere. And it was short and sweet, and it got the job done. And of course, at the beginning, Bad News threatened to do his Survivor Series shuffle. Like, yes, they threatened to walk out. But then he realized it wasn't Survivor Series yet. So. All you, Scotty.
I gave this 2 stars as well. Your match time was 7:44. I agree with you, JR. I love seeing Tito at the Garden. It seems like his home. However, with Mr. Martel, his Strikeforce partner on the shelf, Tito will be doing some JOBs for some people, and that's fine. But a good match. Bad News Brown's a tough one, right? Because again, I think our eyes are awakened while we do our vaults. Both guys we used to hate now like, and in reverse. And even though Bad News was a great character, and you know, watching his stuff from the early '80s, both in the early days of the WWF and when he was in Stampede. This is a guy who really is a good wrestler, and we just never really saw it.
No, not at all here.
You know, and this was rough. I mean, it wasn't offensive. Again, 2 stars is fine, but I feel like a guy like Tito deserves kind of a better match.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of more of a sloppy brawl, but that's fine in this instance. But really. Bad News, like his moveset has just gotten so rough from his past working, and this just was not good, unfortunately. But the character's fun.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. But when you're watching house show matches, you need some substance.
Not even house show, even on TV. There's nothing to him. Yeah, I mean, he might have been broken down a bit too by this point. I don't know. I don't know what what brings about his work style, so we'll see. Obviously we'll see him for a couple more years here, so we'll see what else he brings to the table. And that brings us to our main event of the evening, or final match, however you want to classify it. I'd put this at co-main event level, and that is the Intercontinental title rematch from SummerSlam. It's the Honky Tonk Man looking for revenge and a chance to get his beloved gold back from the Ultimate Warrior, who has skyrocketed up the ladder and now have the rocket push on him. Honky and Jimmy come out ready to regain their gold. Rod says if he doesn't do it tonight, Honky may be waiting a long time for another shot. Warrior runs out to a big pop, bringing all of his usual energy to the ring. Warrior chases Honky around ringside, then unloads on the floor. Back inside, Warrior chucks Honky around until he comes up empty on a leap to the corner. Slams off the buckle to the mat. Honky drops some elbows, but Warrior comes right back and batters Honky to the corner. Warrior gets tied up with Jimmy, allowing Honky to jab him in the lower back with the megaphone. Honky lands some sledgehammer blows, but Warrior fights it off and starts unloading again. Warrior hits a leaping shoulder block and then heads out and attacks Jimmy. Honky makes a save, but that fails. Warrior fights off both men. Honky rolls in and wins by countout, and the crowd was not a fan of that. Warrior beats the piss out of Honky after the bell, but Jimmy saves him. Warrior destroys the guitar, and Al says Honky has the win no matter what happens now. The crowd, again, was not very pleased, and this was kind of a weird finish. I think it makes sense, I guess, to drag it out at least one more month, keep Honky a little strong. But really not much going on here, as expected. Lots going on, a lot of energy up and down the card here tonight. Despite some of the matches, I actually found this to be a fun watch overall, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Warrior losing to me felt weird here. And I'm not going to get into the whole conversation again like we do at Savage after Mania. Like, we get why. Obviously, they want to roll, you know, keep the feud rolling a bit longer. But Warrior, even more than Savage and April, to me, like, needed to stay red hot. And losing by count out to Honky just felt like a step back to me, Scott.
I gave it a star.
Yeah, that's what
Your match time, 3:58, kind of short for final match of the night, considering some of the long matches we've had to suffer with on this show. I don't know if we qualify that argument, because I'm the one who made a big thing about the whole Savage losing out of the gate out of WrestleMania 4. Do we classify the IC belt and the world title as the same? Because I think Warrior – I agree with you about being red hot. But Warrior's character makeup as compared to Savage's character makeup – differs when you're qualifying a finish like this. Warrior works on instinct. Warrior is a beast in the ring. So you could see him making a mistake or not thinking about getting counted out and just going for the for whatever he's going after. Savage losing, particularly to someone like DiBiase at the time, was very unlike him because he's more calculating. He's more aware of the of what's going on around the ring. So losing like that with him didn't sit with me at the time. Warrior's a little different because he's an instinct guy. He works on pure emotion.
I guess
so.
Yeah, I guess my two counters to that would be one, like Savage was much more established, you know, as a star. Whereas Warrior really isn't. Like this was kind of he's just getting there. Okay. And Honky has been presented as soft as shit. Like even his champion, like he's not presented as like a good wrestler. I mean, when Jesse's saying you win by luck. You know, like as a heel, like he's not even putting over his skill at all. You know, it's good to be lucky. So I think to me, there's something. I don't know. Like, I feel like there's. I think a loss to Honky looks worse than a loss to DiBiase. Like, as much as we debated the Savage one, this to me was worse given where Warrior was on the come up and just this soft turd Honky.
Right.
Who I know he's like they always do the rematch thing and they had to do it, but like I just would have maybe had Jimmy come in and hit him with the megaphone, a Warrior wins by DQ, and then he'd give Honky one more or something like that. Again, minor quibble, but having Warrior lose to close the show just felt like a bit of a downer. What did you think, John?
Yeah.
After that long reign of Honky, I guess they didn't want to bury him right away. They still wanted to keep Honky a little bit strong. And instead of Barrett having another year to pin right away, so these matches were a little drawn out after the quick squash at SummerSlam. But Jimmy was very active. Jimmy was the star of this match when he hit a Warrior in the midsection with the megaphone, and Jimmy was all over the place and helped save this match for about a 1.5 star.
All right, and that wraps up the show, which, again, I enjoyed from top to bottom. I thought the crowd was pretty into it, even though there is a lot
I'm sorry. The ref was – I don't know how he made it back from Andre's – it was the same ref as Andre. I don't know how he came back from the dead, but, yeah, who was that? Is that Dick Kroll? I'm not sure what his name was, but, yeah, he survived Andre's abuse.
His return.
So,
doing the big matches tonight. Overall, I thought, you know, it was an enjoyable card, like, to watch – there's a lot of crap of matches, but I thought they were well enough managed and the crowd was into them. And even the Sandy Beach thing, like we talked about, at least had the ridiculous commentary just burying them from the start. Yeah. So there was a lot to dig in there. So let's get through our final awards. Match of the night to me was an easy call here, Savage versus Andre.
I agree.
Yep. Okay.
The Cousin Junior for the Big Dog Shit match, again, easy, and that was Casey versus Sandy Beach.
Sandy Beach. This might be the Sandy Beach Award.
It might be Jamie.
Yes.
All right, the Hogan Award for the MVP of the night. I went Andre. I just thought he was a monster throughout, like we've talked about a lot before, and it's just been his year. He just wins award after award for me. So,
I agree, 100%.
Yes, Andre.
All right, the worst work in the night, the Uncle Elmer, maybe soon to be renamed, we'll see, Sandy Beach.
Sandy Beach.
Awful.
Yeah, I'll give Sandy, but I want to also give honorable mention to Mills Lane, the stupid ref.
Not much, but he should have done the beach match. It would have been even worse.
Yeah.
There's a few other candidates for individual workers.
Dino
was bad. Yeah. JYD was bad. There was a few candidates, but
nothing like Sandy.
Nothing like Sandy.
All right, best moment of the night. I went with I was debating the Andre and Liz thing, but actually was a moment earlier in that match which I went with my choice, and that was Bobby and Pat Patterson arguing on ringside. Like that whipped the crowd into such a frenzy and got them so heated for that match. And it's something you didn't really see. Like Patterson was, they've been mentioning him a bit more week to week, but. Like, this is just crazy. Like, him and Bobby were just going at it, and then just gets thrown out. It really sets the tone for the chaos. So, that was my choice.
That was a big moment. I got to go with Andre. Like, his whole histrionics post-match with the belt and, like, chucking Mills Lane around. And all the Andre stuff post-match was just crazy. He owned the building for those, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Owned it.
It's tough. It's a tough pick.
Yeah, no, I like the. I'll go with the Andre grabbing Liz's ankle the way he had that big meat hook, just wrenching her little poor little ankle there. And I don't mention when Lord called Sandy Beach's tights Pensified.
Oh, Graham loved that so much. Oh, he was so excited. That's a great term, Lord. All right, the Morocco Award for the biggest juice head of the night, to me, easy layup, Dino Bravo, who may be overtaking eventually the name of this award. Morocco has a lot, but Bravo is coming for him for sure.
Yeah, he's going to get a run here.
Yep. Dino, yeah.
All right, in the Patera Award for the worst hair, I went with Sandy Beach and his Officer Fava.
Sandy Beach sweep. Show.
You guys agree?
Nah, I got to go Houston.
Yeah?
Yeah, I had that stupid whatever country fro, whatever he had.
Yeah, that curl was pretty lousy.
At least Sandy had the 80s mullet.
I accidentally typed Sandy Breach, by the way, which tells you exactly how I feel about him. Who'd you like, Scott?
Sandy Beach's hair was pretty awful, but I agree with John. I got to go with Sam Houston's hair. It was fairly terrible.
That's also
Sandy almost looked like a. Oh, go ahead, John. What were you going to say?
No, that's also what we call Big Al when he buries himself in the sandbox. and throws the sand all over his hair.
yeah, it was rough.
All right. And finally, our grade out of 10. As I'm reading through it, I'm like, But to me, there was a show where the whole of the parts was greater than whatever, each of the parts, whatever, however you want to say it. When you look at each individual match, it was kind of shaky, but for some reason, the way it all came together, the crowd being hot and everything else that went along with it, really carried things and made it enjoyable for me. You tack on the Andre Savage stuff, which was great, and I went 5.5 out of 10 on this.
I'm going to give it a 5. And I'm being generous because other than Savage Andre, most of the show is trash. But the Andre stuff was awesome. It was good to see Warrior, even though he lost. And I mean, just some of the workers on this night were just some people just forget no working boots. They left them, they left them in the limo because some of these guys were just lazy slugs. But I think Andre enough kind of carried it, and Savage coming out again. So some of the excitement kept it 50-50, but right now the roster's in big trouble, and the purging needs to continue.
If you go on work rate, it's like a 1, but the spectacle, the greatness of Andre and Macho Man and some of the other things, and plus the commentary brings it up to a 5. Overall, for entertainment,
it really was like an intangible show. Like when you just look at the matches on paper and the grades, it looks awful. But whatever reason, the commentary, the crowd, like to me, it all just kind of clicked on this one. So, all right, that'll do it. Episode 501 is done. Scott, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with John, looking at the October 88 MSG. And John, you were in attendance for that one, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. So we'll be getting a live report on that. we'll see what memories reside deep in that disturbed mind of yours.
See like Mills Lane in the memories. Concourse.
Yeah, memories.
All right. Also, be sure to check out on the Police Nation Wrestling feed a new episode of Wrestling Warzone. Yes, me and Chad, we're back looking at the November 6, 95 Raw Nitro that dropped over the weekend, as did the first From the Vault where the big boys play. We're going to be rerunning the entire legacy of that show on the PlayStation Wrestling feed. So if you never heard it, or you're new to it, or you want to go back and re-listen to it, it'll all be made available for you on our Podbean feed through PlayStation Wrestling. And Starrcade 83 was our first episode, Chad and Parv. So we're going to be bringing those to you to relive and revisit. We always get questions about if there'll be new ones and everything else, but this is the best we can do. So enjoy. Check that out. Scott, anything you want to plug?
Well, check out the newest episode of Main Event, which dropped last week, and there'll be a new show debuting tomorrow on the PTBM Pop feed that I was a guest on earlier this week, but I'll keep it a surprise. You'll have to check it out. It'll hit PlaceBNation.com tomorrow morning and the Pop feed, so stay tuned.
lots going on in the pop feed. I think Geek and Sassy have done more episodes in this past week than they had in, like, you know, the last 2 months. So check all those out. All the Marvel Age podcasts, of course, keep dropping. We have our weekly sports show. You, John, and Roger.
Yes, this week
in the NFL. Yep. So
excellent.
There's a new Freak Out Drive-In with Jason Sherman and Jenny, looking at Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Yep.
So lots going on at Police Nation Pop. Be sure to subscribe to that feed. And, of course, the Police Nation Wrestling feed, subscribe as well. I mentioned the two shows earlier, but also had a PTBN Pop Blast. Stacey O'Loughlin was actually live at the Super Showdown over the weekend in Australia, and she did a quick hit on her experience going live. So check that out on that feed, too. Be sure to join up with the GWE Tag Teams Projects. Ballot should be opening soon.
Get close.
Yeah, you can look to get those in. Start working on your list, and of course, me and Aaron on No Holds Barred are starting to build a list together on that show. So, lots going on. All right, Facebook.com/PlaceBNation, Twitter, Place Number 2 B Nation, Instagram, I think, Tumblr maybe still out there. Our ebooks available for free download on the right hand column. PlayStation.com and PlaceBNation/Amazon. PlayStation.com/Amazon. As Glenn Butler has told me, I've been saying it wrong all these years, so be sure to click there for your shopping needs. All right, I'm tired. I'm done. John, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. I'll talk to you whenever. Goodbye, everyone. The countdown to 3,000 is on.
The countdown to 3,000. 3,000 bills.
Official theme song of the JLOS.
Here's a little song I wrote. Sandy Beach, Mike.
Returning from commercial, I told you to early. He's on BPT. Catch him on public access, free TV. And we're back, live on the air with Brack. So Brack, how your man got a show that's so whack? Have you ever thought to work with Earl? Heck, not no. Do you got enough oxygen from this toxic phlegm? Another sec, his neck would have got flames. Mouse switch the screen to some hot dames. Tonight's audience received mid-screen video games and 15 seconds of fame. Pitiful lames. It's just a shame. The zoning, competing for the same prime time slot as Conan. No dummy Ichigawa announced me. Free lunch journey stunt who lets me flower in the shower for an hour. The kid's supposed to be asleep. Balls to join the sound like Roadrunner. Beep beep. Later this week, Big Ben Klingon. After him, there's no one else we could afford to bring on. Keep it ghetto and let him know BYOB from the get go. I like to propose a toast to the grocer's host. Space holes, coast to coast. That destructor is a played out gag in a cape and a pantsuit. Looking like a straight out dag. Don't mean to sound crunchy. Hit a honey from the back and crumpled up a scrunchie. A light snack, hungry munchie. Felt a funny hunch, then she told him, donkey punch me. Tomorrow is Father Guido Sarducci, Father MC, and Charo Coochie Coochie with her new bestseller, Who You Call a Hoochie, a proud sponsor of the Snoochie Boochie Noochies. Look Leela eyeball to eyeballs and find out how they get inside them sugar pie balls. Our next guest, a real cutie specimen, and she's starting to get a little booty, Miss Judy Jetson. So Judy, boxers, briefs, or fig leaf. As you know, I wear my boxers, so my big... Cue the rapper, tell him bring what little he got. Up against the Billy, it's really not diddly squat. Until they head hurts, when it come to wreck. Cruises like them dudes in red shirts off Star Trek. He Kirk, he Spock, he McCoy. Been B-boy since your judge first squeezed toys. Born to be the host with the most. When it's on, space holes, coast to coast.
You think I'm just gonna hand over my show to you, Doom? Have you lost your f***ing mind? Listen. I'm not going to hand my show over to you. You know why? Because it's my show. Mine, not yours. Space Ghost. It ain't Doom Coast to Coast. Yeah, sure. Here are the keys to the show. Why don't you drive for a while?